All right, friends, as promised, we wanted to take some time just to offer some additional conversation talking points about the practice of Sabbath. And part of this is because I know that it's so foreign to our way of life, right? Like it's nothing in our society lends itself towards slowing down, right? This is the whole idea behind the productivity machine. We are trying to do more things faster, even with AI, like this concept of trying to build in or offload some of the tasks, not so that we don't have to do them, but so that we can take on more and more meaningful responsibilities while passing stuff off to, you know, a robot, right? Like everything in our society is geared towards doing more and more and more. So Sabbath just brings up a lot of questions. There's fears of like, are we becoming legalistic? Is it weird? I think there's really practical questions depending on your season of life. Like, what if my kids are in sports? Are you saying like they can't do sports? So we wanted to take just a moment to work through some additional practical questions about Sabbath. So in the message, I talked a little bit about what our evening in the Osborne household looks like. Want to add some flesh and bones to that a little bit more. I said it starts for us Sabbath on Friday night and Saturday night. I'm sharing this not so that you can say, hey, look at me, but just so that there's like a picture of what this might be able to look like in your season of life. Friday night, all of Friday actually is a dash to get a bunch of stuff done. Like my days off in the week, you know, from my vocation would be Friday and Saturday. So I'm at home on Fridays. I do a lot of the lawn. If we do shopping or errands, like I'll try and take some of that stuff off of Courtney's plate. We get those things done. But Friday up until dinner is kind of a, you know, we're trying to get a lot of stuff done. And the reason is so that we can actually step into that sacred moment in time, the Sabbath, from Friday night to Saturday night, with like it actually rests. And not have to catch up on everything else. Now, we don't do this perfectly. There's stuff that comes up. Like, it's normal life, right? But the idea is we're building intentional time throughout the rest of the week to do things that we can do then. We often say, like in our house, that, hey, God has given us 6 other days for this task or sometimes for this conversation. Today, we're just not going to do those things. Friday's Med Dash. Get to dinner time. We've decided like we're going to do kind of a nicer meal. It's not labor intensive. Like most of the time it's a rotisserie chicken from Costco. We set it up and we have actual Sabbath candles that we light every night or every Sabbath night. And what we do with our kids with the age they're in right now is we kind of retell the creation story. Like God created all of these things for in part for our enjoyment, for his glory. We want to thank God for his good gifts. And as we light the candles, we tell the kids, hey, we want to remember that Jesus is the light in our home. And Courtney right now, I love this, you know, a couple weeks ago, she said, hey, I think we should work on a family Sabbath blessing, like something we say every Sabbath night. And I love that idea, right? Again, the thing is, it's not that it's formulaic. It's what we are doing is remembering and guarding that time. And intentionality with how we use that is one way that we guard and mark out the Sabbath day, the Sabbath time. So we have a blessing. And then we enjoy the meal together. If we have friends over, like it's an opportunity for us to, you know, sometimes it's a little bit strange because they haven't done a Sabbath liturgy before, but we invite them over, they participate in that with us. And then we celebrate, you know, having friendships. Like that's a good thing that God has given us. So we enjoy that. That's part of the rest and worship mentality that we have. The evening is done sometimes just on a practical level. Like we've learned, we usually do paper plates on Sabbath. And I mean, it's kind of like so that we don't really have to do dishes afterwards. There's a little thing that we've discovered along the way. Saturday, we wake up slow. The kids are young. They still sleep in. But we have longer time, Courtney and I, where we're not scheduling. Like if we're going to go out to a park or a family walk or something like that, we're not going to do it first thing in the morning. We're going to have a slow morning where we can sip coffee. You know, Courtney and I really like to read our Bibles down there together in the front room and have conversation. We kind of like meander through the morning with conversation, and there's time of, you know, reflection. It's not this like, if you walk into our home, it would just look like two of us sitting on the couch, sometimes talking to each other, but it's really meaningful for us. And we're saying we're not making ourselves busy right now. Again, not every Saturday is going to look like stuff comes up. The season of life we're in right now, we have a lot more control over our kids' schedule, right? And the evening comes to an end. One thing I'll say about that is we, as much as we can, we try and limit like technology. We don't do as much technology on Sabbath, and not because it's like a work thing that God says you shouldn't do that. It's more because we get distracted and like our hearts and minds just go somewhere else. So that's really practical. That is one snapshot of what it could look like. Now, you could just say, hey, we're going to start with an evening. We're going to try an evening. We're going to do this like nice dinner. We're going to have this kind of liturgy and just enjoy it. What you will find is that you will begin to crave more. You will crave more of that time as you remember it by putting it on your calendar and guard it by building the rest of the week around it. You'll find that the rest of the week begins to shape up differently because you are engaging in this practice of Sabbath. And over again, we have found that we wake up refreshed and restored, right? So that might be Friday night to Saturday night for you. It might be, you know, Saturday night to Sunday night for you, whatever. I would look at a moment in time. The second question, like, what do you do or not do on Sabbath? And again, this is just like for our family, some things that we have gleaned over the last 4 years of practicing this. There are, honestly, you know, we look at, I shared this with you in the message that Exodus, I think it was Exodus 25, talks about things that we don't do on the Sabbath. There's things that, you know, no kindling of fire, Exodus 35, right? Well, like metaphorically, we'll throw that around in our home and say like, we're not going to do things that intentionally make us angry on the Sabbath. So sometimes that means like, hey, we're just not going to talk about this political thing that's going on right now. God's given us 6 other days to worry about that. We're not going to talk about this frustrating thing that might be happening at work. Like, we're not going to, you know, kindle a fire, you know, quote unquote, on that day, or just recognize like he's given us other times to work through these problems. Today is not that time. So it's less about a holistic list of things you can and cannot do, and more about filtering what you do through the grid of, is this restful? Like, is it restorative? Do I feel like I'm actually resting? And is this worshipful? Like, does this help me delight in God and his good gifts? Those are the two things, right? And it's kind of a gut feeling with some of those. Okay. Next big question that I've heard a lot is like, well, what do I do if I'm in a season of life where my kids are, they're in sports? Like, should I get them out of sports? Have we passed the point where we can really start this? And I think that's a complicated question. It's a very hard question, especially in a city like Columbus. And I'll say, we noticed this here. When Courtney and I moved to Columbus, we didn't experience this so much in Chicago. But one of the first questions we would often get asked when we moved here was, what do your kids do? Like, what sports do your kids do? And that was kind of new to us. We never really got asked that back in Chicago before we moved here. I think there's something in the water in Columbus. Like, sports is a really big deal. I'm not going to call it, you know, idolatry, but for some people, it might be. It might be that sports is an idol, not just in your life, but like, are we constructing that in our kids' lives? I think that's a really valid conversation. Now, again, I'm not saying you have to pull your kids out of sports. I'm not even advocating for that. What I am advocating for is a bigger conversation for your family, for you to pause and say, what do we want to build our lives as a family around? Like, what's our left and rights? Like, what do we, are we, what line are we not going to cross? And that's a hard conversation, right? And one of the fears is like, if we don't do stuff, if we don't get them involved in stuff, will they do nothing? I don't, think that's the healthy option either, but you have to find a balance that allows you to engage in this practice, I think, of rest and worship, because this is how God has designed us to flourish and function. I will tell you that I think there's more opportunity for us to limit what our kids are doing than maybe we believe. Just case in point, I'll speak from my own experience. And I've told some of you this before, but one of the best conversations I ever had with my dad, I remember I was 14 years old. I was explaining to him how I wanted to be on the baseball team. And he's walking through like, okay, well, this is how much the baseball team, the travel team is going to cost. Here's the rhythm, you know, for our family. Like, we can maybe make this happen. Here's the travel schedule. Here's what we're going to be doing. And he looked at me right in the eyes as a 14-year-old kid. And he said, the thing is, you're just not that good at baseball. You know what? At first, it's like, how dare you, right? But I think part of that is like, what a wonderful gift. Like, I'm okay. Like, I'm not talking to a therapist about that moment. I actually look back and think, man, my dad was trying to protect me from something, right? Not that if your kids are involved in sports, you're not protecting them, but he was recognizing something in my own life, my own heart, and just saying like, I don't think we need to go down that road. And I say that as someone who's okay. Like, I turned out okay. At least I think I turned out okay. And so that may be a viable conversation to have. Say it differently, maybe, right? But just because there is a rhythm that we see in the world around us does not mean we have to go into that pattern. Have the conversation about priorities. Okay, a couple other things about Sabbath. And this is in no particular order. But one unique aspect of Sabbath that we didn't really talk about so much in the message is that there seems to be a difference, or there is a difference in the way that it's talked about in the Ten Commandments recorded in Exodus and how it's recorded in Deuteronomy. Exodus chapter 20, remember, this is Moses going up to Mount Sinai. He's getting the Decalogue, the 10 words from God on Sinai. He comes down, you have the golden calf incident, gets angry, breaks them, has to go back up, you know, all that stuff. Deuteronomy is a little bit different. Right, Deuteronomy is the people of Israel, most of whom are like they didn't experience the Exodus. Most of those people, they've died, right? So this is now Moses with a new generation. They're about to enter into the Promised Land. They're about to cross the river on the plains of Moab, about to go in, and they get retold the commandments. In fact, you can think about it this way: Deuteronomy is like a long sermon that Moses preached on the books of Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers. And he says something very different in Exodus, or in Deuteronomy chapter 5. He says something very different. As he lays out the Ten Commandments there, he says it this way, right? You shall observe the Sabbath day, keep it holy, or guard the Sabbath day, keep it holy. So the Lord your God has commanded you 6 days, you shall do labor and do all your work. The seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it, you shall not do any work, right? Keeps going, right? And it says it this way, you shall remember, verse 15, that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. One of the interesting features of Deuteronomy is that he flips the reason for why we keep the Sabbath. In Deuteronomy, this is about remembering that there was turmoil and pain and like toil in Egypt. And it's almost this commandment to resist that, right? Because the rest of the world is going to constantly be sucking you back into the same framework of work and production. And God is reframing this entire relationship with reality by saying, you are forsaking that as the rhythm of Sabbath becomes normal in your life. You're saying, I'm no longer committed to this system of work, 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 work. We said it was a picture of grace, right? Because Sabbath comes first and then we work. It's not that we work and earn Sabbath, right? We talked about it. It's a picture of grace. You can think about Sabbath as a way of resistance, In fact, Walter Brueggemann has a wonderful book on Sabbath. He calls it Sabbath as Resistance. And it is this practice of saying we're going to resist certain patterns and idols and just like a normal way of the world. We're going to take this moment of time, and it begins to reframe how we think about the rest of our lives, how we engage in the world around us. We are saying we're not going to be like Pharaoh. We're not giving ourselves over to that same production-driven style of life. There is a freedom that we have in following Jesus. Sabbath is this thing that on an ongoing basis begins to reprogram our hearts and minds, orienting them around a new way of life, much of which we have talked about over this whole series, in practicing the art of becoming more like Jesus, right? And so there are things that some people would say, hey, we don't do this practice on Sabbath. One of them is like, Courtney and I, we try not to shop on Amazon on Sabbath, right? Like, it sounds silly, right? And it's not a law in our house. But one of the reasons is because, like, so much of the rest of our week is built around doing and like trying to amass things for ourselves. And what else are we doing on Amazon? Just scrolling through, trying to find something new that maybe I want. No, but the point of Sabbath is to say that actually, no, God has already provided for what I need, and I can enjoy the good gifts that He has given, not redirect my heart to longing for something else. All right, there's a ton more questions we could spend time talking about, but this is just some additional fodder. And I'd encourage you in your life group, talk about Sabbath. What does that rhythm look like for you? Right? What does it look like for your family? What might you be able to glean from other people? If you got questions about this, or like we obviously did not exhaust all of them, come talk with me about it. I'd love to have a conversation. Jason would love to have a conversation with you more about what Sabbath looks like.